We're holding on the top of page 96 in Sanhedrin, middle of Ois Kuftes. We left off yesterday discussing the question. The Gemara had brought the opinion of the Shammai that a boy 8 years old is already his bia is considered a significant bia in halacha, and that he's able to be mazriya. As opposed to Beis Hillel says the minimum age is 9 to even be Mazriya, and then the Gemara explains for him to actually be able to produce a viable baby, he'd have to be at least 13, which is why Ben Sarah Murda can't be more than a couple of months past age 13, because conceivably he could be married and his wife would be pregnant enough for the baby to be enough for the pregnancy to be noticeable. So the Gemara was dealing with how exactly we know that. We went through the family tree of Achitofel leading down to Shlomo HaMelech. Does that prove it? We said no. We went through the family tree of Terach's children, and we said no, that doesn't really prove it either. So Elamin Nolam, so where do we know this from? The idea that a boy in Dirtus that is showing him in those early generations, as we learned yesterday, between the Mabel and the time of the first and the beginning of the first Beis Hamikdash, were able to father children at age 8. So Mehacha, we can learn it as follows. Who was the main architect of the Mishkan? Betzalel ben Uri ben Hur Lamata Yehuda. So we understand that Betzalel's grandfather was Hur. Now, who was Hur's father? Uchtiv, you have a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim. It's talking over there about Kalev, about Thomas Azuva. So the pasuk says that the Azuva, who was Kalev's wife, Eishes Kalev, it says in parenthesis, but it doesn't actually say that in the pasuk. Azuva passed away, Vayikach leKalev as Ephros, and then Kalev married Ephros, Vatele Loyas Chur, and she bore Chur to him. So we see, therefore, that Chur's father is Kalev. The Gemara elsewhere talks about that actually Azuva and Ephros both refer to Miriam. B'chalal, Divrei Yomim is meant to be Darshan. It's not. We've learned in this shir before that Chazal tell us that Divrei Yomim, unlike the rest of Tanakh, where in Mikri it's Midei Pshutei, Divrei Yomim is basically there for the purpose of Darshas. So the Gemara elsewhere explains that Azuva and Ephros both refer to Miriam. Azuva is, so she's called that because Miloshin abandoned, because she was very sickly and nobody was interested in marrying her except for Kalev married her, L'shem Shemayim, and Ephros means distinguished, and in fact her descendants are called, including Dovna Malach, the Gemara explains, are called Ephrosim. Anyway, the point is that Hur was their son. Okay, so that makes Kalev Betzalel's great-grandfather. Now, he offered Betzalel Mishkan Bar Kamahava. Now, how old was Betzalel when he made the Mishkan? Must have been about Tzleis Shni. He must have been no less than 13 years old. Just give Ish Ish Mamalachta Shehema Oisin, because the pasuk describes that all the people, each man came from where they're working, and they tell Moshe we have too much material. So we see everybody who was working on the Mishkan had to be an Ish, and therefore so Betzalel, the chief architect, had to be an Ish, which means by definition he had to be at least 13. Now, even we're talking about in these Zodas that are showing him that the people could have children at unusually young ages, we're saying now at 8. Nevertheless, the fact that a boy becomes a man at 13, becomes bar mitzvah at 13, is, we learn it from the story of Shimon and Levi by Shem, or we learn in Halacha L'Moshe Sinai, whatever the case is, that's how it is. So even if in those times a boy was actually able to father children at younger than that, nevertheless, if he was below 13, he still wouldn't be called an ish. Now, the Tani. So we understand that Betzalel was at least 13. He might have been older, but for our purposes, it's enough to say that he was 13. The Tanya. Now we learn in a Braisa, Shani Rishona Osa Moshe Mishkan. During the first year after Yetzias Mitzrayim is when, under Moshe's direction, the Mishkan was made. They started making it. Moshe came down with the instructions the day after Yom Kippur, and they started donating all the materials. They started putting together all the equipment and all the pieces of it. They finished it, as we know, the Medrash tells us, Chofei Kislev, but Hashem said we're waiting until Rosh Chodesh Nissan for the Chanukah Sabayis, and Chofei Kislev will get it to do over 1,000 years later in the times of the Hashmonaim. So that was all during the first year after Yetzias Mitzrayim. Years of Yetzias Mitzrayim, of course, run from Nisan to Nisan. So this was all before 1 year had passed since Yetzias Mitzrayim. Shnia, during the second year, Hakim Mishkan is when they set up the Mishkan. The Mishkan was set up every day during the Shiva Simei Milurim, but every day they would take it down. So that's not really considered set up. Rosh Chodesh Nisan, they put it up, and it remained up continuously from then until they left Har Sinai. So that was in the beginning of the second year, the Shilach Meraglim, and later that year was when Moshe sent out the Meraglim. He sent them out Choftes Sivan. They were away for 40 days. They came back Ches Av, and we know that night they cried, and that was the night of Tisha B'Av, etc. So that was all in the second year. Now, among the Meraglim was Kalev. Uchtiv, years later, Kalev is speaking to Yehoshua and reminding him of the promise that Hashem had given, that Hashem had given in Parashat Shlach, and again repeated in this week's Parashah, that Kalev and Yehoshua will survive and go into Eretz Yisrael and will be given a special portion over there, especially Kalev, because he had a harder time of it, what with having to pretend to be on the Meraglim's side and really secretly being against them. Anyway, he describes, he starts by saying to Yehoshua, "Ben aboim shana anochi v'shloach Moshe eved Hashem begomer." I was 40 years old when Moshe sent me as one of the Meraglim. Va'ata, and now he concludes, "Hine anochi hayem ben chamash u'shmonim shana." Now I'm 85 years old, and I'm still alive and healthy, Baruch Hashem, and it's time for that promise to be fulfilled and for me to be given the land, which therefore he was given Chevron, because he went there to Maris Machpelah by himself. Marsha points out that on the face of it, we don't really need to mention the point about him being 85. That's not really relevant over here. All that's relevant is really the fact that he was 40 when he was sent as one of the Meraglim, which means in the year of Yetzias Mitzrayim, a year earlier, he was 39. With that said, Anaf Yosef points out there is a logic behind it, because that helps us establish that we're talking about complete years over here. The Gemara elsewhere explains that from when they sent the Meraglim until they entered Eretz Yisrael, we know it was another 38 years, because again, the Meraglim were in the second year, and they stayed 40 years in the desert. And then after that, the Gemara elsewhere derives from the fact that Kalev says, "I'm 85 now," that it took them 7 years to conquer Eretz Yisrael, because this is Kalev is speaking to Yeshua now once they had finished conquering Eretz Yisrael, when it's time to start dividing it up. So if we didn't have that pasuk, we wouldn't know that we're talking complete years. You could say that maybe it means when he says I was 40, he means it was in his 40th year, and then the calculation wouldn't work out. But like this, it's clear that it means he was actually 40 years old. Okay, kamahavilahu avoyim. So now he was 40 at the time when he was sent as one of the Meraglim. Now at that point, how was Betzalel Dal Arbesa? So have a Betzalel subtract at that point. Betzalel is 14, because if it was 13 when he was supervised the construction of Mishkan, then in the next year he's already 14. Poshalu Esrin Veshis. That leaves you 26 years in which to fit three generations, because you have from Betzalel to Hur to Uri and then to Betzalel. Dal tautish shni d'tlosa iburi, so subtract 2 years to cover the three pregnancies, because like we learned yesterday, a pregnancy can conceivably be 7 months, and then you have to have a month for the woman to become tahor and able to become pregnant again. So therefore, ishtat, and now, as we learned yesterday, another way of looking at it is maybe it's not exactly, maybe it could be 2 full years, maybe it could actually be a little bit less, but still, rounding it up, it's 2 years. Ishtat, as to chochad v'chad, the tamni oled, so it comes out that each one of them had to have fathered a child at age 8, Betzalel to Uri, and, Kolev to Hur, and Hur to, and here you don't have any women involved, unlike with Achitofel and his descendants, where we have Bathsheba in the middle, and we argued maybe women are stronger and able to bear children earlier. Here, it's all men, so therefore there's no inescapably, we have to say that each one of them was 8. Marsha brings over here from Rashi on that, on Divrei Yomim, that explains when we say Azuva and Urios would actually be not wives of Kalev, or as we said before, Drosha, that they both refer to the same wife, Miriam, but rather daughters. And then if you make a calculation, then it would come out, we're told we have even less time to work with, but fine. The point is, maybe Azuva, Urias, and Hur are all children of Kalev, and you could say when we say over here 2 years for the three pregnancies, we're actually doing that in order to cover the pregnancies and the births of Kalev's own three children. Be that as it may, the point is there we've established that a Duras of the Shonim, they were able to father children at age 8. So now Beis Shammai again says, based on that, even in later generations when we don't have that capability anymore, nevertheless we can still say the Bia of an 8-year-old is significant, whereas Beis Hillel is going to say no, 9. Going on, now the main subject of the first half of our perek is the Ben Sora Remora. And the Gemara goes through the many different details that you need in order for the boy to be a Ben Sora Remora. One of them was this matter of the age, and there were many other details. So Pisca, quoting from the Mishnah, Ben Velei Bas. One of those details is that the dinim of Ben Sora Remora apply only to a boy, not a girl. Now, why is that? Tanya, Omer Reb Shimon, we learn in a Braisa that Reb Shimon says, Bidin hu shetei bas ru'il this to ben sora remora. You would think by rights, a girl should also be able to become a Ben Sotah Ramoda and be treated the same way. Because what's the whole reason behind Ben Sotah Ramoda? Later on in the Perek, the Gemara explains the idea is, now the Ben Sotah Ramoda, what are you doing at this point? He's the details as we go through the dinim and the Perek are, he steals money from his parents and he uses it to buy meat and wine and he eats it in a gluttonous, riotous way together with a company of empty-headed people like him. Now, is that the kind of thing should make a person chayav nisa? We learned earlier in our Masechta. We said that one of the things we learned from the pasuk lois soich lo al adam means don't eat in such a way that's going to lead to that person is not allowed to eat in a way that's going to lead to his bloodshed. Namely, there is the iser for a ben sotah murder. But still, what's a such a so, okay? He's a juvenile delinquent. Is that a reason? Is that a reason to execute him? So the Gemara explains this is an example of yomus zakai val yomus chayav. What's going to happen? He's going to keep on doing this kind of thing. Eventually, he's going to use up all of his parents' money, and then he's going to go become a highwayman and rob and kill people. So the Torah says, you know, if he's on the road to eventually being chayav misa, we may as well execute him now before he reaches that stage. Yomus zakai, let him die when he's still innocent. Val yomus chayav, rather than he has to die anyway when he's already guilty of serious averus. Tshuva, of course, tshuva is always possible. And look, if he does tshuva, then fine. But for Derech HaTeva, we're saying if he's gotten to this point, then we can't necessarily assume that if he does tshuva, wonderful. But until he does, then we have to take that up. But it is true there may be a difference in that regard between Din Shamayim and Din Adam. For example, we have by Yishmael where he's dying of thirst under the bush over there, and the Eibishter says that I'm judging him right now, and the Malachim are arguing his descendants are going to kill Jews, and the Eibishter says, yeah, but right now he's not guilty of that, and therefore I'm judging him b'asher rishon as he is now. So one of the many explanations of Taka, what the difference is, because there it's the Eibishter judging him, and the Eibishter can see the future and see, and then the fact is, Yishmael himself did trouble, whereas based in Shomata does not have that capability, and therefore the Eibishter puts it in their hands, Yomus Zakai Val Yomus Chayiv.
I don't understand, because Yishmael is sent because he tried to kill Yitzchak,
right? But that's true, right? But on the other hand, still relative to whether he did true by the end of his years. But no, you're right. It does say that he was shooting arrows at Yitzchak and pretending like he's playing around. He's doing avodah zarah gilad ice and shvichas damim. All true, but still, you know, relatively speaking, he's still oich merat tzaddik. But relatively speaking, he's still tzaddik at that point. Befrat compared to his children, yeah. Anyway, the point is that Rashi points out, well, with a girl the same way. If she's a zol v'sover, if she's this gluttonous and then eater and drinker when she's little, isn't she going to do the same thing? Except that instead of becoming a highwayman, she's going to become a zoyna, and then she's going to go and solicit people for that. And that can even involve, in other words, that there's going to be there can be Mrs. Bastin involved, because after all, she herself may be married at some point, and nevertheless she's going to go and do this, and then there's an Isu Misa involved. So Shakol Mitzuri and Etzla, after all, then everybody might be by her. In other words, again, she might seduce people into serious Averis as well. Ba'avera. Shakol Mitzuri and Etzla Ba'avera, many people are going to be found by her when it comes to Avera, when it comes to Znus. Ella, but, says Rav Shimon, Gzeres HaKosov, well, Ben Veloy Bas, that's how it is. Gzeres HaKosov, it applies only to boys, not to girls. Now, what's the logical reason behind that? Well, the Rambam gives a reason. After all, we're talking about eating meat and drinking wine in a gluttonous and riotous way. The Rambam says, b'chlal, girls are not really prone to get addicted to that kind of thing in the first place. So in other words, the idea is, you know, ultimately it's Gzeres HaKosov, but to that extent we can find a logical basis behind it. I mean, after all, we could say, why did the Torah have to make it dafka dependent on meat and wine? It could have been on other kinds of behavior that boys and girls are equally prone to. So instead we can say, you know, when the Torah chose some kind of behavior that boys are more prone to rather than girls, and in order because the Eibishter decided that this is how it has to be ben v'lo bas. Then Yoyada brings an idea on it. He says that when we consider the nations of the world, we Jewish people, we have many different metaphors that are used to talk about our relationship with the Eibishter. One of them very, very often was spoken of as Hashem's daughter, but in a different sense, we can say relative to the other nations, we're considered Hashem's son, B'nei B'chori Yisrael, whereas the other nations are considered more like daughters. So therefore, the idea is, since the whole idea of Ben Sotter Mota, the Gemara explains, is a very rare thing to happen, according to one opinion in the Gemara, which we'll have later on, it never even happened in history, so it's only meant, Jerush for Kabbal Schar, it's meant for us to learn and take a lesson from it, so therefore, the Eibishter wants that lesson is meant for us, the Jewish people, less so for the Goyim, and therefore, in token of that, he says that it's only for boys, not for girls. Okay. Next. Now, one of the things, again, in order to be a Ben Sotter Gemara, it has to be that he drinks wine, that he drinks a certain amount of wine. So that leads the Gemara into a discussion about the negative effects of wine, and then also sometimes the positive effects of wine. So the Gemara starts off, Omer Abchanan, Le'nivra yayin ba'olam elo l'nacham aveilim ul l'shalom schar l'rashoyim. Wine was created in the world only to comfort aveilim. They drink and it helps them forget their sorrow. And to pay a reward for the Rishoyim. This way they enjoy it in this world, and therefore that way they get their schar for the mitzvahs they did, and that way they use up their schar in this world. So Marsha points out, you know, when you get down to it, you think of how many bad things there are just in Tanakh alone from wine. Soon we're going to talk about Noach. You have the Aseres HaShvatim overindulged in wine, and that led to their downfall. We say Haroya Sota B'Kokola, that when a person sees a Sota and realizes that wine is one of the things that very likely lowered her inhibitions and brought her to become what she became, then Yazer Atzim and Ayayin, which is why Nozer and Sota are together in the Torah and together in Shas. You have the Pasuk tells us about Yonadab ben Recha, the descendant of Yisrael, who told his children, he told his descendants to never even drink wine. So with all of that, you have to ask, why did the Eibishter even create wine in the first place? It must be for these things, l'nacham aveilim, or l'shalom schar l'rashoyim. As far as nicham aveilim, in fact, there's Gemara in Ksubas that tells us they used to have the minag that in a beis ha'ovel, when they were giving a meal to the ovel, that with the meal, they were given 10 cups of wine. 3 before the meal, 3 during the meal, and 4 after it. Because again, the idea is that this way it would help him forget his troubles. Anyway, so Shenemar, the pasuk says, Tnu Sheikho La'ovid, give strong drink to the one who is lost, which means that refers, Rashi says to the Rasha, he's Ovid, he's lost from this world, in the sense he uses up his schar in this world, and he's lost in Olam Haba. The Yayin, and give wine, the Morei Nafesh, to those who are bitter of spirit, meaning the Avelim. So we see that wine is meant for the Ovid and the Morei Nafesh. Earlier in the Masechta, we also had, for example, that before a person is executed by Beis Din, also they would give him a drink of wine mixed with Levoina, and the Gemara brought the same pasuk. Tnu Sheikha la'Ovid, the poor person is about to be lost from the world, so give him one last drink to numb his senses. Even Yaakov points out, I mean, we have many mitzvahs that we do with wine, but the fact is, the Eibishter could have created that wine shouldn't make a person so drunk. So therefore, so it must be, it's for the why did the Eibishter make it, that it's capable of getting people drunk, is for these reasons. Omer Rabbi Yitzchak, so Rabbi Yitzchak says, in this connection, my dichtiv, what does it mean, a pasuk in Mishlei, al tera yayin ki yis adam, don't look at the wine because it's red. Pasuk pshat is, in other words, it's red, it looks good, like it looks like good stuff, you're going to look at it and say, I really want some of it, so Shlomo is warning you, don't do that. But what does this mean, ki yis adam, that it becomes red? Which, by the way, in Halacha, we have, for example, we learn from that red wine is preferable when it comes to Kiddush and the Dalad Kosis and things like that. Anyway, it means al tera yayin, don't look at wine and don't pay attention to it and start indulging in it, because you should realize what it does. Shemadin pneim shel reshoyim ba'olam hazeh, it causes the faces of the reshoyim to turn red in this world, meaning in other words that they enjoy it and they drink and they enjoy themselves. Umalvin pneim la'olam haba, but it causes their faces to turn pale in olam haba when they realize what they lost out in this world. So, in fact, Marsha points out the next pasuk after this one that the Gemara quoted continues, Acharisei kenochash yishach. The end of it, the after effect of it is going to bite like a snake. So that means the after effect in Gan Eden, the person's going to feel like he was bitten by a snake. He's going to have such a tremendous regret that he overindulged in wine in this world. Rava says a different way of looking at it. Al tera yayin ki yis adam, when it says don't see the wine, that yis ki yis adam means al tera yayin shach risay dam. The end of it is blood. A person overindulges in it, he ends up getting killed for it. Whether like the Ben Sotter murder, or whether a person gets killed in a drunken brawl or whatever. So So in fact, Maharsha points out also in those psukim over there. You look in the psukim over there. There you have a whole series of psukim in Mishlei at the end of Perek Chof Gimel, where Shlomo is decrying the effects of wine, and he mentions over there. He has a line over there which the Gemara is going to quote. The Gemara is going to quote a pasuk of it in a minute. Lemi oy, lemi avoy, lemi midonim, lemi siach, lemi tsoyim chinam. Who is it that suffers from woes and from and wounds and so forth and the And the, so that would be a person who gets drunk. And in fact, the second half of the pasuk, Al Teira Yayin Ki Adam, continues Ki Yitin Bakois Eino. A person puts his eye on the cup, and he decides he wants to drink it. Yishalach B'mei Sharim, and he goes in a straight way. So what it means is like this. First of all, the Maharsha points out there's a kriu ksiv in the pasuk over there. The word bakois is written in the ksiv with a yud instead of the vav. So it can be read bakis. So it means, in other words, that so Rashi on the pasuk actually explains what it means is if you're going to overindulge in wine, the guy who's selling it to you, the innkeeper, is going to be looking at your purse, at your money bag, and thinking to himself, you know what? I have an easy way to get it from this guy. All I have to do is keep on plying him with alcohol. And it'll pay me all of it. But another point is also that if it means that if a person controls himself and keeps in makis eino, he pays attention to his budget and doesn't overindulge in it, and then yishalach b'mei shorim, then he'll be able to go in a straight way and not get into fights, as opposed to otherwise, as the pasuk says, lemi oy, lemi avoy, lemi tsoyim, who is it that ends up getting wounded and injured and having other troubles, is people who drink too much. Daniel Yoda points out the word Yisadam can actually be broken up to Yesei Dam, which means blood will come, which fits very nicely with what we're saying over here, that as a result of too much wine, then blood comes. Rav Kahana points out then in this connection a contradiction between a kriyuk siv and the pasuk. Siv tirosh v'koron and tirosh. One of the words for wine in Tanakh is tirosh. You know, many times, dogon tirosh v'yitzah. Sometimes it's spelt without the vav. So that means if we were to read it the way it's written in the Sefer Torah or in the Book of Nach, then we would read it as if it said Tirosh, but we actually read it Tirosh with a cholam. So what does that represent? Zocha Nasa Rosh. Zocha Nasa Rosh, sorry, yeah. Zocha Nasa Rosh. It means if a person is Zocha, Tirosh stands for Tihi Rosh. You will be a head, you will be a leader as a result of using wine in the right way. Loi Zocha, and if a person is not Zocha, Nasa Rosh, then he becomes poor. Ti Rosh, as in Tihi Rosh, you will become poor. Similarly, Rava pointed out a similar contradiction. Ksiv Yisamach, V'Korin Yisamach. We have the pasuk V'Yayin Yisamach Lavav Enosh. Tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh, we're going to be saying it in davening. But again, because Shin and Sin use the same letter form in Lashon Kodesh and in a handwritten tilim, you wouldn't see a difference. So you could read the word. If you didn't know that it's supposed to be Yisamach, you would read it Yisamach with a Shin. Well, what does that mean? It's Meloshon Shmama. So Zocha Mesamcha means if a person is Zocha, then the wine makes him happy, Yisamach. But Loi Zocha, but if he's not Zocha Meshamehu, then it makes him desolate. As in other words, then the word Yisamach is taken to be Meloshon Shmama. As we have many times that a hey and a ches are interchangeable in droshes, they look very similar, and the original pronunciation of a ches also, which the Saudim still do, is pronounced very much like a hey. So therefore, the Gemara often has drashas where instead of a ches, we have a hey, or vice versa, and therefore we can read the word yishamach as meloshin yishama, which means it will make him desolate. Now, what does that mean that if a person is zoicha, v'hainu d'omar rova, as Rava himself said, chamra v'reichni patchin, wine and fragrances made me wise. In other words, that he drank the right amount and not too much, and he had fragrances, and that helped open up his mind to Torah. So that's Uriu and the Masechta, for example. We had about the sons of Reb Chiya, where Rebbe said, give them some wine so that they'll open up and say deep words of Torah. So a person like Rava knows how to use that properly, and therefore, Fakert, it opens up his mind and makes him better able to say words of Torah. There's an interesting vote on it, by the way, that we know from morning davening, Mipnei Shakil Yofal Absamim, that when you're pounding spices, you're supposed to be speaking, which is why they would be saying Hodik Hetiv Hetiv Hodik, because that's good for grinding spices. On the other hand, the Gemara in Menachos tells us when you're measuring out wine, when you're pouring wine, it's better to be quiet. I mean, it mentions over there, for example, that a gizbar, a treasurer of the Beis Mikdash, would go to a wine vendor to buy wine for the Nesachim. So you'd have the guy tap the barrel and then pour wine out of it into his container, where if he notices that dregs are starting to come out with the wine, and that then you're not supposed to have that in the wine for the Nesachim, instead of telling the guy to stop, he would bang with his stick as a signal to the guy to stop. Why? Because you're not supposed to talk when wine is being poured. So therefore, the vote is, when Rava is saying, Chamer v'reich metakrin, there's a vote on this from Sfasenes and from others, that it means that Rava was saying, we also know how to use the methods for wine and the methods for spices, each in their proper time, when it's appropriate to speak and when it's appropriate to not speak. Here we have, in Pirkei Avos, Siyog L'chot Meshsika, and Lamed Sasi Tug L'guf Tug Meshsika, and all that Rambam explains, that actually the Rambam breaks down. You have many different kinds of speech. Everything from speech, which is a mitzvah, all the way to the other extreme, speech was an absolute aveira, like Lashon Hara and whatever. And then you have in between all kinds. You have divrei rishus and things that are you have things that are appropriate and things that are necessary, and so on and so forth. So therefore, Sir Rava is saying that also he knew how to use the wine method or the spice method, each in its proper way. More on this. Omer of Amram, Breder of Shimon, Ba'aba, Omer of Chanina. My dichtiv, some more of those psukim in Mishlei that talk about the bad effects of wine. Shlema says, Lemi oi, to who is there woe? Lemi avoy, to who is there avoy, which is also a lotion of yelling out of in pain and in trouble. Rashi points out, we had a few days ago, we had the story of the Amshech Nesagdola davening for the Yetzirah of Avodah Zarah to be removed, and they start out by appealing to Hashem, baya, baya. So now this expression, avoy, is related to that. What baya means please, yeah, it's malon, yeah. But it's a lotion of crying out in pain, yeah. Oy vavoy, yeah, that's where it comes from, yeah. So who has oy, who has avoy? Lemi medonim, who has fight? Lemi siach, who has trouble? Rashi siach can mean speech, but Rashi explains to you it means trouble, like ored besichi, like the pasuk says, I groan in my trouble, in my pain. Lemif soyim chinam, Shlomo continues, who has wounds for no good reason? And who has red eyes? And the answer is people who stay late drinking wine, people who go around from one place to another to check out where the best mixed wine is located. So all those, so such people are going to be subject to all these troubles that Shlomo is saying. Now, Ki Osir of Dimi Omer, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he explained that this is one of the Amrib Marova, they say in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, Haikra, that these two psukim, Mande Dorishle Midresh, or Soifa Midresh, or Soifa the Resh Midresh. You can actually explain these psukim in either direction. You can explain one you can explain the first pasuk as a cause, and the second as an effect, or the other way around, the first one as the effect, and the second one as the cause. Namely, you can say, like this. The simple meaning would be that what causes all these things, the second pasuk from Achrim Alayayin, the people who drink a lot of wine. But you can also look at it the other way. You can say someone who has oy and avoy and siach, somebody who has all these troubles, such as aveilim and midoyim and midonim and soyim chinam and fights and wounds for no good reason, namely the rishoyim who fight with people, and then those who have chachlulu senayim, those who are very fat and overindulgent, those are the ones that ma'achrim alayayin, those are the ones who might as well be late over the wine, because like we said before, wine is good for aveilim, and as far as the rishoyim, it's like it uses up their schusim in this world. So you can understand that either way, that it means as a result of wine, a person has oy, avoy, medonim, and siach, and so forth. Or you can say, when a person has oy, avoy, medonim, or siach, etc., then he may as well have wine. Malsha points out that actually, if a person might have three kinds of tzoris. There can be oi, where he has a headache from drinking too much. Avoy, where avoy is also in the lashon ovad, like he lost his money, he wasted his money. And siach is the tsar that he wasted his time. So those are three things that can be caused that a person is going to end up indulge in wine and then realize that he lost in those three things. Then the psoim chinam, Marshas, is an interesting idea. Normally, if a person is injured by somebody else, it's not chinam, because he'll know who the guy is. He'll find out who the guy is and take him to Beis Din and get paid. But if he's drunk, he doesn't know who it was. So he ends up throwing chinam. He ends up getting injured for nothing. He doesn't even get any, anything money out of it. Then Maharsha points out, when we say nimsach over here, means, as Rashi points out, means mixed wine. Now, we find Rava, for example, the Gemara mentions in a number of places in Shas, used to dilute his wine extra much, more than most people did. Most people would, in those days, they almost always diluted their wine. It was too strong or too syrupy or whatever to drink neat. But most people would mix one part wine to two parts water. Rava, the Gemara tells us, in a number of places in Shas, would mix one part wine to three parts water. So Rava is doing the right thing, but on the other, and then it doesn't make a person so drunk. So faket, then it's good for him. But now laboy mlachka mimsach, people are checking, they want strong wine, they don't want it diluted like Rava, then that's a problem. So that's all if we take, again, that's all Maharsha says, that's all, according to the first possibility, if we take Meireisha L'Soifa, that the Pasuk is telling us, Shlomo is telling us, what's going to happen to a person who overindulges in wine is all these things, lemi avoy, lemi medonim, etc. He's going to suffer from all these other things. The other way of looking at it, when we're saying that, again, if a person is suffering from troubles, then he can drown it in drinking, so now it can be, when a person has oy, meaning during the first 3 days of Avelus, avoy during the remaining, during the reigning time of Eilus, Siach would be doing the rest of Shloshim. Soim Chinam, where a person is having Tsar, and when a person is crying, and therefore is Soim Chinam, or he cries a lot, and that makes his eyes red, so then such people may as well drink a little bit in order to make themselves feel better. So again, you can also understand the pasuk that way, and in that case, then Shlomo is telling us that there is a certain validity to drinking wine. It does sometimes, for such people, it can be beneficial. Okay, Mishnayis Midas, we are holding Peret Gimel Mishnah Beis. We learned yesterday about the basic structure of the Mizbeach. Basically, it's like three squares, one on top of the other. The widest square on the bottom, or almost square, is for the Yisoid. The next square on top of that leads up to the Soiviv, and the square on top of that leads up to the top of the Mizbeach. The Mishnah continues, Rekeren Ma Rovis Dremis, in the southwest corner, Hoyushnei Nekovim, there were two holes, Kamin Shnei Choytmin Dakin, like two thin nostrils. So yesterday we talked about on the top of the Mizbeach, there were holes over there to pour the Nesachim into. Now actually, though, we're focusing on the base, on the Yisoid, that on the south. Now we said the Yisoid went along the entire west side of the Mizbeach and the entire north side. Now we said it stuck out a little bit towards the south, from the west towards the south. We said there are three different opinions among Rishonim how far. First of all, you have an opinion actually in the Gemara in Zvachim, you have an opinion of Levi that it did physically surround the whole Mizbeach, but only this L shape had the din of the Yisoid. But the more mainstream opinion is that there was a physical Yisoid only on two sides. It stuck out over here. Within that, you have a few opinions of Mephoshim. Did it only stick out in a straight line? Did it go and wrap around the corner? Or did it go even further, almost all the way to the corner? Everybody agrees, as the Gemara says, that on this corner, there was no Yisoid. Be that as it may, on the southwestern corner, in the Yisoid, Hoyushnei Nekovim, there were two holes, Kamin Shnei Choytmin Dakin, like two thin nostrils, Shadom Mani Tonin, Yisoid Ma Roviva, Yisoid Jeremi. Now you have, sometimes when you finish with a korban, sometimes the blood, the Shiri Adam, as we say in morning davening, are poured on the Yisoid Ma Rovi, on the western side of the Yisoid. That's with korbanos where the blood is brought into the Heichel, the korbanos of Yom Kippur, and a couple of others. Anyway, we have the Shiri Adam. Most other korbanos, the shirayim, are poured on the southern Yisoid, meaning on that little extension towards the south. So now you have holes over there by that southwestern corner. So both types of blood, yod and behen, would go down through the holes. Almost arvin ba'ama, they would mix together in the ama, which was a water channel that ran through the azara. The Yotzim, the Nachal Kidron, and they would flow out to Nachal Kidron. Ultimately, the Amma would go out, so that it would go to Nachal Kidron, which is east of Yerushalayim, so someplace all the way over here. Ultimately, this Amma would turn and go in a channel out to Nachal Kidron. The mission mentions in Yuma, farmers over there would then buy that congealed blood from the Beis Hamikdash to use as fertilizer. So in order for, so you pour the blood on the Yisoid, that's where it goes from there. Next, the Mishnah continues. Mishnah Gimel, Lamata Beritzvah, but Oisak Keren, right below there, right below the Mizbeach, by that same corner, the southwestern corner, Makom Hayisham Amma Alama. There was a space there, an Amma by an Amma. The Tavla Shal Shayish, where there was a tile of marble. The Tabas Hosek Ruba, and it had a ring attached to it as a handle. We had something similar in Perak Aleph. There was something similar in the Beis HaMoked where the keys were kept under it. Here, the point of it was, it was an access hatch to get down to the Shisim. Through that, they would go down to the shis and clean it out. Because after a while, the blood would congeal there, and it would get to, and it would, even though the blood is flowing out, inevitably some of it remains behind. And after a while, it would get clogged up. So every so often, they'd have to open it up and clean it. For that matter, also, it talks about that the same way where the wine and oil were poured, well, not oil, or wine and water were poured from the top of the Mizbeach through the holes over there. Also, they went down to the Shisim, and every so often those would also get congealed. And so the Gemara tells us in Sukkah that every now and then, every 7 years, they would go down and clean that out as well. By the way, there's an interesting, you know, we always talk about the Pach Shemen that was found with the seal of the Kohen Gadol, which they lit by on Hanukkah. Where did they find that the Yevonim didn't get to it? There's an interesting one of the Piyutim that you find in some Sidurim for Hanukkah says that they found it in the Shisim. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense because nobody would have gone in there. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Continues the Mishnah.
Why was it there?
So obviously the Eibishter put them in the mind of some previous Kohanim to put it there many years earlier. Yeah. Continues the Mishnah. The Kedesh Shoyel the Droimish from Mizbeach. There was a ramp on the south side of the Mizbeach. Lamed Beis Al Roich of Tes Zayin. It was 32 amos long by 16 wide. The 32 amos long, by the way, according to most Mefoshim, refers to the slope of it. The base of it along the floor would have actually taken up less space. So there are the Mephoshim who explain the other way around, that the base of it was 32 and the slope would have been a little bit more. Anyway, 32 by 16. The reason it was on the south, the Gemara explains in Zvachim, that basically we learn it from a pasuk. Yechezkel, when he describes the Mizbeach, says, Omale Seo Pnois Kodim, the going up to the Mizbeach has to be in such a way that you'll turn east when you come off it, and since we know you always have to call Pinus Shatapona, the Yu El Yamin, whenever you're turning, you always have to turn to your right, therefore, and we know from Ezra McClellan, Oliver Klevish, Ophana Lasoiviv, and he would first go, Lekem Dremis Mizrachis, so that the ramp had to be placed in such a way that when you're turning to the right, the first place you're going to get is to the east. So the only way for that to work out is for it to be in the south. The Gemara has other derivations of it. The Kedesh is called Pnei HaMizbeach, the side where they shecht the Korbanos on the north is called Yerech HaMizbeach, so to speak. Like when a person sits and his face is in one direction and his Yerech, his thighs, are in the other. So the same way the Mizbeach has, so to speak, its face is over here and its thigh, its Yerech, is over here. Anyway, that's how it was. It was on the south. Yeah.
Israelim were able to go in until the
Mizbeach? Israelim were able to go in the Ezra Sisrael. We talked about a few days ago that maybe they were also able to go along the sides all the way back to the back of the Heichal over here when it was crowded. But no, to go into the Ezra Sisrael, to go even into Ezra's Koyanim, they only could if there was a particular reason for them to, for example, do Smicha. It's an achloikas in the Gemara in a couple of places when you have kodshe kodshim that have to be shechted in the tzofin. What is considered tzofin, one manda omer is it's only the area due north of the Mizbeach. So in that case, and since take of the smicha shchita, it would mean a Yisrael would have to go all the way here for that purpose. Another opinion is includes also this area over here. And the third opinion, which is the halacha, is includes also the north half of the Ezra Yisrael. So in that case, the Yisrael could stand in the Ezra Yisrael and do his smicha and then they could shecht the korban right there.
But every korban needs smicha.
Not every korban needs smicha, but of those that do, only kodshim kodshim have to be shechted in the north. Okay, the Mishnah continues. Uruvuva hoiskaloi b'mal rovid. Kevesh had a revuva on its west side. We'll explain in a second what a revuva is. Sheshamay noisin psule chatas oif. There they would put posula chatas oif. You have a chatas oif, is a person brings a bird as a chatas. It can happen that it becomes posul. For one reason or another, something, the Kohen does something wrong with it during the Avodah. It can't be burnt, there are some cases when it can't be burnt right away because of certain considerations in halacha, but on the other hand, they can't, in other words, a chatas ha'oif, all you do is, the only part of a chatas ha'oif that goes on the Mizbeach is the blood. The blood is squirted out on the Mizbeach, the Kohenim are supposed to eat the rest of it. But if it became possible, the Kohenim can't eat it. It was killed by Malika, it's considered Nevela. On the other hand, they can't burn it right away, so what they would do is they would put it in the revuva until it started spoiling, and then they could take it and burn it with other psulam. The Rambam learns that the Revuva was built into the side of the Mizbeach. It was a little window. The Ravid objects and says that it seems that the Revuva was actually next to the Mizbeach, and there was a different, there was something else, a Haloyin over there. In any case, that's where it was, right nearby there. The point is, usually by this corner, the southwest corner, would be usually where they do a Chatas HaOif in the first place. So if it became possible, then that would be the natural place to tuck it in, to leave it there until it becomes possible. Mishnah Dalad continues. Echad Avnei HaKeveh.
You left it there.
So they'll leave it there for a day or whatever until it starts spoiling, and then at that point it's anyway not edible, and then therefore they could take it out and burn it. Yeah, the general rule with Psula HaMakdashin, sometimes that Psula HaMakdashin can be burnt right away. Sometimes, yeah, you have to wait until they have Ibur Tsura, what's called, that they've been left overnight and become fossil. So it wasn't on the Mizbeach. It was, according to the Rambam, was built into the side of the Kevish, and according to the Ravid, it was nearby. It was in the floor next to the Mizbeach or something. Mishnah continues, Mishnah Dalet, Echad Avnei HaKevesh VeEchad Avnei HaMizbeach, both the stones for the Kevesh and for the Mizbeach, Midikas Beis Kerem. They would bring them from the valley of Beis Kerem, which was a valley where they could find smooth stones. Nowadays, there's a neighborhood of Yerushalayim, there's a neighborhood in West Yerushalayim called Beis HaKerem. Is it the same place? No idea. Anyway, the Chofrin Lamata Mibsula, they would have to dig below the virgin soil. The problem is, as we're going to say further on in the Mishnah, the stones for the Mizbeach cannot have been touched by iron. Now, if you just dig into the soil, you're going to find stones, but they may have been touched by iron as people plow or dig or whatever. So you have to dig down to where you're sure the soil has never been touched. And obviously they have to use wooden shovels or something for that purpose. Umuvian Mishnah, nowadays I guess they could use plastic or whatever, but whatever. Anyway, Umuvian Mishnah Avonim Shleimus Shalehunafale and Barzel. They have to bring from there whole stones that iron has never touched. The stones have to be smooth, first of all, and they also have to be untouched by iron. The Rambam brings another alternative as well. They could get them from the bottom of the sea, where also you'll find smooth stones that have also not been touched by iron. Anyway, why is that? The fact is, Shabbarzel posts them in the Gia. If iron even touches any of the stones, it makes it possible. Or Pegimel, the whole dover, and if there's a nick in a stone, then it also makes it possible.
They take it out.
They take it out, then they'd have to use wooden shovels or something.
It's a shamir.
No, Tosfos points out elsewhere they couldn't use the shamir for the purpose because the shamir wouldn't make a smooth cut. It would make a jagged cut. And since we're saying you can't have a pegima, it has to be like shchita knife, it has to be perfectly smooth, so Tosfos points out elsewhere they couldn't have used the shamir for it. No, they have to have whole, natural whole stones. And then the Mishnah continues, nifguma achas mehen. What if
the stone also, you have to make it straight.
No, but that's the point. If a whole stone, you don't. No, we started talking yesterday about the Mizbeach. We said that what they would do is they made a wooden frame and then they poured into it a mixture of various stones and various kinds of binders, and then that would be the structure of the Mizbeach, would be built out of that. So the stones themselves don't have to have a smooth finish. The finish will be on the outside from the other concrete-like material that goes with it. So now the Mishnah continues, Nifka Ma'achas Mehen, if one of the stones has a nick in it, heap sul of a kulon kshiris. That stone is possible, but the rest of the stones will be cautious. You have to take out that stone and replace it. And the Mishnah continues, Malabdin Oisin Pamayim Bashana. Twice a year they would plaster the Mizbeach and the Kevesh. Echad B'Pesach, Echad B'Chag, once before Pesach, or once before Pesach, and once before Sukkot. Those are the times when there's going to be a lot of early regals, and the pastors, they want the Mizbeach to look its nicest.
So they paint it?
So they plaster it, basically. They plaster it, cover it with a coat of plaster. As far as the Hechel, they would plaster it once a year, Pesach time. Rebbe says, not only twice a year, once a year by the Hechel, kol Erev Shabbos, malam noisim amapim pnei adamim. Every Erev Shabbos, they would clean off the Mizbeach and the Kevesh with a wet cloth, because of the blood. During the week, you have a lot of blood spilled and poured on the Mizbeach, so every Erev Shabbos, they would take a wet cloth and wipe it off. Now, when it came to the plastering, they would not use for the plastering a trowel made out of metal, as you usually would, because it might touch the actual Mizbeach, the Yifzel, and then it'll make it possible. Now, what's wrong with iron touching the Mizbeach? Iron was created to shorten people's lives. It's used for weapons. Whereas the Mizbeach was created to lengthen a person's life. So it wouldn't be right that the thing that shortens life should be wielded against the thing that lengthens life, and therefore no iron can touch the Mizbeach. But ever talks about that in Lasid Lavo, when weapons of war are going to be turned for peace, the Chitzu Chavos from Leitim, then in fact iron can be used in the construction of the third base in English. Okay, Yom Yom Mashiach Ugo'oloch of Tes Tammuz. The Pashtos, the Meniskayim, take it from Yad, what Yaakov wanted, Leish Bikash Yaakov, Leish B'Shalva, which he was doing that on behalf of the Jewish people. As we say, Yeshu Yishorah Mespanecha, we will sit and dwell in Hashem's presence in the base of Mikdash HaShlishi, and there we'll have the great Fabrengen of the Chanukah Sabayis HaShlishi, together with the whole Jewish people, Ko Yeshver Olev. Yad Mamsh. Continuing with Halachas of Tzitzis, Yesh Noyagin, that to look at tzitzis, to look at the tzitzis when you get to the Isim Oise and put them over your eyes, this is a good mitzvah, and it's a good thing to do, and it's an expression of chibuv mitzvah, to show the preciousness of the mitzvah. We also have the minute to kiss the tzitzis when we look at them all for chibuv mitzvah. So we have each of the six times that we kiss the tzitzis, we pass them over three times when we say tzitzis, and then emes and kayemes and lad, we pass them over our eyes and we kiss them. In particular, you should look at the two tzitzis in front of you that ever continue, because they have 10 knots in them, so that hints to the Esses Sfiras that are all connected together. They also have 16 threads, because you have 16 strings, 8 for each one, and 10 knots altogether equals 26, which is the gematria of Shem Havaya. And the last thing, he says, the oynesh of somebody who's mevatel mitzvah tzitzis is great, because tzitzis is such an easy mitzvah to do, that thus the pasuk says, lechaz v'kanfas ha'aretz, to grasp the corners of the earth and shake off the reshoim from it. So in other words, so to speak, like the reshoim are shaken off as a result of not doing the mitzvah of the corners of tzitzis. Okay, when a person is careful with mitzvah tzitzis, zoycha v'roya p'neshvin. I'm kind of